Get in touch with irresistibly touchable skin.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Banfield tonight. I know special can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, but on this show, it usually means one thing. An edge of your seat mystery filled with twists and turns, and the one that we're serving up tonight is a beaut. I'm talking murder and bones, thousands of them, and kink and secrets, and a hero who might actually be a villain. We still don't know after 25 years, so get comfy, grab a stiff drink, and turn off your phone, because you don't want any interruptions on your visit to the Fox Hollow Farm, an 18-acre killing field just outside of Indianapolis. If that name rings a bell, you either lived through the shock of what happened there, and it would be mighty hard to forget, or you have seen a new docuseries on Hulu called The Fox Hollow Murders, Playground of a Serial Killer.
I'd never seen that many skeletal remains. Thousands. Bones everywhere. How many victims are out here?
I had no idea what was about to unfold.
It's a serial killer case.
The dance floor would be packed. The bars were the one place in the city where we felt safe.
This killer, he's the Dahmer you've never heard of. It was like Gacy's basement.
Tonight, for the hour, we are putting together the puzzle pieces of this epic crime, from the moment it came into public view to the painstaking efforts 3 decades later to put a name to each and every one of the bone fragments that they've unearthed at that grisly farm. The man who has made that work his mission is going to be my guest tonight, and later a cold case detective weighs in on the hero of the story, and whether or not he really is a hero. One of the biggest unanswered questions remains, could one man really have been capable of so much carnage all by himself? And then, how the Fox Hollow victims are possibly speaking to us from beyond the grave. Yes, a haunting. Their buried bones definitely outed a murderous predator. There's no question there. But many believe their unearthly remains are still on those grounds and are not exactly resting in peace. Are they really haunting people who come to Fox Hollow? An expert on the paranormal is our guide for that tonight, and he's got some experience. It's a lot to unpack, so let's get started with the background on the case itself. When young men started disappearing in and around Indianapolis in the mid-1980s, all the way through till the mid-1990s, it didn't go completely unnoticed. Flyers would go up on the walls at the local gay bars. Friends would reach out to other friends. But at a time when AIDS was ravaging gay communities everywhere, when seeing somebody one day and then never seeing them again became almost normal, it is fair to say that what was really happening in Indy did not get the attention it deserved. Apart from a deadly plague, gay people lived, as many live now, with the ever-present fear of being outed, of losing a job or a family, if one dared to be their true self in public. But in 1994, one man did come forward with chilling accounts of a man who called himself Brian. The man said Brian frequented Indianapolis gay bars, luring men back to his home to keep the party going, which in his case meant strangling, erotic asphyxiation, and maybe much worse. The man said it happened to him that Brian took him to a lavish home with an indoor pool. But the pool was bizarre. It was staged with male mannequins. And Brian's request? That was even more bizarre. He asked to be strangled as part of an erotic kink. And of course, he wanted to reciprocate. The man said that was his cue. He got out of there fast. And sadly, could not remember where the house was. But 1 year later, he ran into Brian again. And this time he took down the license plate number, which led detectives to a place called Fox Hollow Farm, home of a local businessman who owned a chain of thrift stores. That man was a family man with a wife that he'd met at Indiana University and three children, a boy and two girls. His name was Herb Baumeister. Police asked to search Baumeister's property, all 18 acres of it. But Baumeister refused, said no. What they didn't know then was that Mrs. Baumeister, Julie, already had some suspicions of her own. Around the time of the tipster's narrow escape from Brian with the creepy pool staged with mannequins, the Baumeister's 13-year-old son had found a human skull in the woods near the house. Herb Baumeister laughed it off. He said it was from a skeleton that his father, an anesthesiologist, had since med school. Police didn't have enough for a search warrant, but for a second time, they asked if they could come in and poke around. And this time they asked Julie. And they told Julie about Herb's secret life. But the answer to police was still the same. No way. Get out. Months went by and the Baumeister's marriage fell apart. There were money problems, on top of everything else. And in June of 1996, while Herb was out of town, Julie okayed a search. And what police unearthed over two solid weeks was staggering.
People just have missing people, and they've heard that we have found human remains on the property here, and they're just inquiring as to what we have and letting us know who is missing out of their families or what it might be, what their questions are.
Investigators found more than 10,000 burned and crushed human remains, bones and pieces of bones. There were jaw bones with teeth still attached, found in a stream bed. There was an arm bone with a handcuff still on it. Police would estimate the bones belonged to at least 25 individual victims. By 1999, 8 of those victims would have names. But Herb Baumeister, he was long gone. He disappeared just one day into the search of Fox Hollow Farm. But he wouldn't be gone too long. His body turned up in Ontario, Canada, several days later.
Police found the remains of 5 people on Baumeister's Hamilton County estate. Last week, Baumeister killed himself in a park in Ontario, Canada. Investigators have told News 8 he shot himself in the head.
There was a suicide note, but it only mentioned Baumeister's failing marriage and struggling business. Nothing about his secret life at the gay clubs, and nothing about a secret life as a serial killer. And from 1999 to 2022, almost a quarter century, the investigation itself almost died. But then came Eric Pranger.
My aunt was ready to give up years ago. She's made several calls, like before Jeff was there, and she just lost hope. Then I made the phone call, and we were able to reopen the case and get results.
Eric Pranger's cousin was Alan Livingston, a young gay man who disappeared in 1993 and fit the profile of Baumeister's known victims. Cousin Eric wanted closure for Alan Livingston's mom and pushed the authorities to test more of the Fox Hollow bones using 21st century science. The coroner of Hamilton County obliged. He chose 44 fragments out of 10,000 and began the now familiar process of genetic genealogy. And amazingly, Alan Livingston was the very first match that was made.
How is your family processing all of this, especially Alan's mom?
She's doing quite well. She's got the closure that she needed.
I mean, closure is a tough word, right? I don't know what it means for her. It means different things to different people. But, you know, this is your cousin, too. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I mainly did this for her. She's 77 years old, and she deserves closure for her son that's been missing for 30 years.
To date, 11 victims of Herb Baumeister have been identified, and two others are close, pending final confirmation. But how many victims are there? Apart from the estimated 25 on the property, Baumeister is also linked to a string of murders along Interstate 70 in Indiana and Ohio. In the early 1990s, the I-70 killer made headlines across the country and was featured more than once on America's Most Wanted. But the I-70 killer has never been caught.
Still to come, thousands of bone fragments scattered across acres and acres of private land, a body count too high to confirm. Did Herb Baumeister have help killing all those unsuspecting victims and disposing of their bodies? And if he did, who helped him? Could it have been his lone survivor, who's never told the same story twice, who's never been formally accused, but who seems to go out of his way to draw attention to himself? After a break, the search for a serial killer's accomplice, if one exists, and the name that just keeps popping up as a likely suspect, when the legend of Fox Hollow continues.
Thanks for listening to News Nation on the Go. I'm Chris Cuomo. This is America's fastest growing cable news network, delivering fact-based, unbiased news from all sides.
Herbert Baumeister is believed to have been the most prolific serial killer you may never have heard of. Investigators say he cruised gay bars in Indianapolis back in the early 1990s, unbeknownst to his wife and family back home. When they were away, he would lure the men that he'd met to Fox Hollow Farm, his sprawling 18-acre estate and home. And there, he would have kinky sex with the men in a ghoulish indoor pool surrounded by creepy mannequins. And when he was done, he would kill them. Then he would burn their bodies and scatter their bones all around his property, never to be seen again. Or so he thought. To date, more than 10,000 bones and bone fragments have been recovered from what investigators believe are at least 25 victims. But only 11 of the victims have been identified beyond all doubt. By the time police closed in on the crime scene back in 1996, Baumeister, he was gone. He fled to Canada. And it was in Canada where he put a gun to his head and ended his own life, taking his secrets with him all the way to the grave. Or did he? The coroner in Hamilton County is plenty confused by Herb Baumeister, and he keeps coming back to the same question. How did an Indiana thrift store owner with a double life and a double-digit body count drag all of these dead people into the woods all by himself? Jeff Jellison is that coroner and says the sheer number of victims and the grueling effort required to move, incinerate, and dismember their bodies makes it highly unlikely Herb Baumeister acted alone.
I'm a coroner. I move deceased individuals daily. For one man to drag people from a house to 200 yards back into a woods by himself, I think raises some questions. They found shotgun shells in the woods. They found handcuffs in the woods. And one set of handcuffs had a human arm stuck through it. So was he acting by himself and just taking people back to the woods and doing what he was doing there, killed them there? Or was he working with some help? A witness said that he watched Baumeister shoot a man while another individual held him by the arms. That individual's still around today.
We don't know who that individual is, if in fact they exist, but one name keeps coming up again and again.
Mark Goodyear. He's Herb Baumeister's only known survivor, so he says, and the man who brought Baumeister down a year after their lone encounter. But his story has never stayed the same. To be clear, Mark Goodyear has never been charged, never been named a suspect, nor even a person of interest. But details in his accounts have shifted over the years, and at times, he's flat out contradicted himself. In the fall of 1994, long after gay men started going missing in Indianapolis, Mark Goodyear told police he met a man named Brian at a local bar and went home with him. It was a distinctive home too, Goodyear says, and he painted them a picture. There was a long driveway, an indoor pool, a bar, and lifelike mannequins posed to look like visitors. But when it came to where this memorable house was, Goodyear says he couldn't remember. He says he did have sex with Brian and said Brian introduced him to something called erotic asphyxiation. He said Brian wanted to be choked in the pool and then wanted to return the favor by strangling his guest with a hose. But Mark Goodyear says he fought back and got away. As luck would have it, 1 year later, he spotted Brian again at a bar, and this time took down the license plate, which led police straight to Fox Hollow Farm, where in June of 1996, they discovered Herb Baumeister had a hell of a secret. There were thousands of human bones scattered throughout the woods. It was a mass graveyard, minus the graves, for untold numbers of unknown victims. Mark Goodyear was hailed as the man who put a monster on ice. But then came Mark's changing stories. Some investigators believed he knew more than he said, and that what he said might not have been completely true. And now, in the Hulu docuseries, The Fox Hollow Killer, Goodyear makes a truly stunning claim that Baumeister never tried to hurt him, that he and Baumeister dated for 2 years, and that he only went to police to push them into investigating. So, what exactly is the truth? Was Mark Goodyear a survivor, a secret fling, or neither? Was he more entangled in the horror at Fox Hollow Farm than he let on? Even today, as investigators continue to sift through the bones of innocent and unsuspecting victims, Mark Goodyear's connection to the grisly hobbies of a serial killer, well, that remains a puzzling mystery.
And if that mystery is ever solved, it may reveal even more darkness buried beneath the misty earth throughout Fox Hollow Farm. Coming up, did the Fox Hollow Killer name his accomplice himself? I'll speak with an investigator who says there's reason to believe he did, and that the killer feared that accomplice would come after him. Also ahead, the other big mystery at Fox Hollow Farm, the amount of human evidence buried there is second only to another infamous crime scene, albeit a much more famous one. And that is Ground Zero, the site of the World Trade Center attack on 9/11. After a break, the coroner, who wants to put names to as many of Herb Baumeister's victims as humanly possible.
You're listening to Banfield on News Nation's audio stream, available 24/7 on the News Nation app, or just say, Alexa, play News Nation.
When an Indiana woman finally consented to a search of the 18-acre property that she and her husband called home, police found more than they ever could have expected. thousands upon thousands of bits and pieces and slivers of human bones belonging to an estimated 25 different victims. This happened back in the summer of 1996. So fast forward to 2025, almost 30 years, and only now do we finally have a pretty clear indication of the atrocities at Fox Hollow Farm. But two very big questions remain. Did Herbert Baumeister have a partner in serial murder, an accomplice before, during, or after the fact? And who exactly were all those victims? Fewer than a third had been identified when the case went dormant at the dawn of the 21st century. And the man who now serves as the coroner of Hamilton County, Indiana, says that is not nearly good enough. Jeff Jellison joins me now, along with renowned cold case investigator Stephen Ainsworth. And thank you to both of you for being here. Stephen, let me start with you, if I can. This crime scene is like nothing ever I've ever heard about in covering 30 years of true crime. How do you even begin a project of this magnitude?
Ask Jeff. He took on this crazy, crazy, huge burden to try and do the right thing and identify who these victims are. So you have to start at the beginning and see what you have for evidence, how many bones remain, where those bones are at, and then try and gather reports and kind of figure out where you're going to go from there. And obviously, his concern is to identify these victims.
And I feel like just as an investigator, there's the then, back in the 90s, and there's the now, as they continue to try to solve the mystery. Were they as good back then at putting out the grid and making sure that everything was thoroughly searched? Or do you sort of have to start all over again now?
Well, it looks like that they did a good job. I mean, a very professional job. It's the same thing that we would do today, to grid it out and then locate every bone that's in there and document its location, where it came from, and what it is, if they can tell what it is. So I think it looks like they did a pretty good job then. They may have stopped too early, though. And I think after Baumeister killed himself, it was kind of like, the case is over. We're done at this point. And so it got dropped, even though all of the victims had been identified, and they still have all of these people to try and identify and return to their families.
So, Jeff Jellison, jump in here with the today story. Do we think that everything has been recovered? Every piece of bone fragment that we're ever going to find has been recovered? Or do we think that there could be a hell of a lot more out there?
No, I'm convinced that we've got more remains on that property. There was just too many of them were found. It's a very large property. It's a killing field. So there's no doubt in my mind there still are remains on that property.
And where does the investigation stand? Are there active, you know, searches going on? Are there planned searches? I mean, that someone lives there now. This is someone else's home.
Yeah, so this property is occupied. There's neighboring properties as well that kind of join up against this, where we suspect some remains may be. We are in the planning stages of revisiting those properties to do another excavation.
So it's almost like here we go all over again. New excavations, new grids, new, you know, planning. Yeah, Stephen, if you look at the evidence that we have to date, I'm the layperson who hears the words, you know, thousands and thousands of bone fragments, upwards of 10,000 bone fragments. And I wonder to myself, how and why? Are you able as an investigator to have figured out what it was that Herb Baumeister did to these victims to render them almost completely destroyed into pieces?
Exactly how he did it, but it looks like that they were mostly crushed because some of the fragments are so small. I mean, you have a couple, some femurs, you got a couple of femurs, you have some ribs and some of the longer bones, but most of them are just tiny, tiny fragments. And so he had to use some sort of methodology to crush them. And I think it would have been after they were already skeletonized, and then that makes it easier to crush. But I think he used some kind of machinery maybe to crush them so that maybe they weren't recognizable as skeletal remains.
And nothing was ever found on the property that suggested there was a crushing mechanism, some kind of machinery that would have been used that had even perhaps, you know, human detritus on it?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
So, Jeff, help me to sort of extrapolate. And I know this is sort of a ghoulish conversation, but it is confusing to hear about this many victims rendered so completely destroyed into minuscule pieces. Is it also possible he may have burned the victims and then crushed the remaining, debris from the fire to render them so small, the pieces so small?
Yeah, many of the remains do show evidence that they were burned. And, you know, that burning process can cause those remains to fragment and fracture on themselves. But with all, you know, nearly all of the remains being fragments or small pieces, it is, you know, likely that he did crush those remains.
And were there any tool marks? I know that's a big part of forensic science, is to look at human remains and determine what kind of tool marks can be determined on some of those bones to see what sort of weapons were used on the victim. Was there any intelligence that was gleaned from that?
There was not. I have not seen any indication that previous coroners or law enforcement discovered any tool marks on any of the remains.
Is that still perhaps something to be addressed and to be investigated, looking at the fragments again, at least the larger ones, to see if there are identifiable tool marks?
Certainly. We're examining each of those remains, whether they be an intact remain or a partial remain. We're examining all of them to get whatever information or evidence that we can get from that.
So it's just such a colossal job. So, Stephen, one of the details that stood out to me was that there was, I believe, there was one arm that still had a handcuff on it. Is that true? And if so, what sort of intelligence can we yield from that, that this was done in such a hurry that he had to leave it as it was? Because it sounds to me like somebody this meticulous wouldn't have left something so obvious.
I think it points to the fact that it would have been difficult for Baumeister to carry these people into the woods or drag them into the woods. And Jeff and I both talked about this, and I think at least with some of them, he would have walked them into the woods and killed them there. And of course, maybe some didn't go willingly. And so we found some cordage that could have been used for bindings. They found the handcuff with the arm in it. And that certainly would indicate that somebody was restrained and walked into the woods rather than dragged into the woods. So I don't know that he necessarily did that with all of them, but it certainly would explain how one person could get them into the woods. But I don't think he did it with all of them.
And Jeff, to that point that Steve makes, I think the answer is no, because the fragments are so tiny, but was there anything in any of this forensic evidence that showed signs of struggle?
There was one remain recovered, a hyoid bone, and it was fractured. So at least with that, we're suspecting strangulation as the cause of death with that one. But no other remains have produced any evidence that would lead us to a cause of death.
Well, Steve, so my mind is sort of jumping ahead here because some of the, you know, reports from the one survivor, who we'll talk about in a moment, was that Herb would drown his victims in the pool, or he would get into this asphyxiation play, and then he would drown the victim or break the hyoid bone and strangle the victim in the house. But that would require him, if he worked alone, to then drag for approximately a 200-pound corpse out of the pool, out of the house, out into the woods, through the woods, hundreds of yards away. And I find that to be really hard to understand or believe. So with that pattern, Steve, it almost looks like there could have been an accomplice.
To be an accomplice, because Jeff and I have both carried bodies before and dragged bodies before, and it's not an easy task. And then when you talk about the woods that were around there, so back then those woods began almost where the house ends. So they were much heavier then. And these are very, very heavy woods. So I can't see one person breaking brush and dragging a corpse deep into those woods where he could conceal it until the decomposition occurred or whatever was going to happen to it. So it'd be much easier to have two people carry him, one person on the front end and breaking brush as they go through, and then the other person obviously carrying the back end. But I just don't see how it could be done by one person if that's a scenario, which I believe it is.
And of course, the name that keeps coming up is Mark Goodyear, who was hailed as the hero because he started the tipster process that led to Baumeister. But his story was very different all the way along the investigation. What do you know of Mark Goodyear to date? And is he a person of interest? Is he considered a suspect? Is he none of the above and still the hero?
Well, I personally think he should be looked into much more. Obviously, back then, and not to criticize the law enforcement or the coroner or anybody else, but I think when they were interviewing him and back then, he wasn't viewed as a suspect. He was viewed as a witness and a victim. So he wasn't really interrogated as much as he was interviewed. There's a lot of problems with Mark Goodyear. I think a lot of it is his varying statements. They change nearly every time he says something. Some witness statements that indicate that maybe he was present during some of these incidents, and just Goodyear himself trying to distance himself at first from Baumeister, and then getting himself closer and closer and closer, and then all of a sudden they have a relationship for 2 years. So there are a lot of questions that still need to be answered.
And apparently Baumeister calling his lawyer and saying, this guy is stalking me and I'm afraid that he could hurt my family. That's also so fascinating in this story. I only have 10 seconds left, but Jeff, if they find one fragment, would they be able to identify a victim based on just finding one small fragment?
You know, we could do some very amazing things today with DNA that we couldn't do back in the 90s. So, yeah, you know, a small fragment can provide us with an identification.
Well, it is a remarkable story and it's a remarkable effort. And I'm so thankful that both of you joined me to sort of flesh out some of these mysteries and how they can be solved. Stephen Ainsworth and Jeff Jellison, thank you so much for this. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ashley.
Did the victims at Fox Hollow Farm leave more than their earthly remains behind? Visitors to the scene of so many violent deaths and dismemberments have heard and even recorded unexplained voices, like this one.
That is weird.
Did you hear it? Did you hear the ghost say, "Get out of here"? I'm going to play it for you again several times after the break, and I'll talk to the man who was there recording it and other voices too. That's next.
I'm Gabriel Ornelas. Join me as we explore Northern California. I felt like this was an opportunity to rediscover the unique place that has everything for everyone. We're going off-road confidential.
Tomorrow at 5:30 Eastern on News Nation.
Tomorrow, the JFK files are finally released. But is our government revealing everything? News Nation special correspondent Ross Coulthard confronts the new findings.
I find that astonishing.
Declassified, the JFK assassination. Tomorrow at 8, 7 Central on News Nation.
In evidence on this show, direct, circumstantial, and otherwise. But paranormal? That doesn't make it into court. And yet, if any place ever had the right to be haunted, Fox Hollow Farm it is. My next guest is an author and paranormal expert who spent years researching the Herb Baumeister murders for his book, The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm, Unraveling the History and Hauntings of a Serial Killer's Home. Richard Estep, welcome to this special edition of Banfield. It's good to have you here. When did you first hear about this story, and when did you make a connection to paranormal activity?
I first heard about this story on a TV show called Ghost Adventures, which had paid a visit, found some unusual things. And as you said, if any location has the right of being haunted, it's Fox Hollow Farm. So I reached out to the current owners and asked if I could go and investigate to try and uncover the secrets of the farm for myself.
So it's such a bizarre notion that that pool, which every time you see the picture is so creepy with the mannequin staged all around it, that pool still exists today. And the family that bought this home, they still swim in that pool. But you have unearthed some information about things that they've discovered and that they've had happen while swimming in the pool. Tell me the story.
Absolutely. Well, their lodger, Joe, swam in the pool with the boys of the family, the teenage boys, and he was attacked and dragged under the water. And the way he described it to me during our witness interview, Ashley, it was reminiscent of the opening scene from the movie Jaws. Something closed around his neck and then pulled him under the water, some unseen force. And there was nobody within touching distance of him when this happened. So he came out of the pool at high speed and was very reluctant to swim in it again. That's why I had to get in there myself as part of my investigation and had my own sinister experience in that pool.
I'm going to ask about that next, but I wanted to stay with this one for a moment because the teenage boys of the family that lives there now, they were in the pool at the same time that Joe, the lodger, the guy who was staying there, had this, he said he had this happen to him. What did the teenagers say happened at the other end of the pool?
They were at the opposite end of the pool, so they were nowhere near him. It couldn't have been them. They thought he was clowning around. They thought he was pranking, but Joe was terrified. As soon as he surfaced and realized there was no one within distance of him, well, who could that have been that attacked him? And it was an attack.
But then, so you, having heard this, decided, I got to get in that pool for myself. Walk me through what happened.
So it's an extremely cold pool. The owner was very nice to give me access, but wouldn't heat the pool, which costs hundreds of dollars. It's as cold as I've ever been in my life. We played what we were told by Mark Goodyear was Herb's favorite song, which was Blue Bayou by Linda Ronstadt. Didn't hear anything at the time, but when I played back the recording of the recorders we had dispersed around the pool, a male voice whispered in a very clear, very sinister way, a single word. The word was Laura. And that happened to be my wife's name.
Is that something in your business you call an EVP, an electronic voice phenomena?
It is. These are voices which occur on recordings that you don't hear at the time, but on playback, extra voices of people who weren't present not only turn up, but they appear to be saying meaningful things to you.
So you heard a male voice, or on the tape, you heard a male voice saying your wife's name, Laura, but when you were in the pool, you did not hear that at all.
No, neither did any of the other researchers that were around the pool. And none of them said my wife's name because we checked the other recorders, didn't turn up on the one recorder only. So that's classic EVP for you.
So let's talk about what you recorded. And this one is a little more freaky. I played it during the tease, going out to the break before this segment, and I'm going to play it again. This was, correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, you were going out into the woods where you believed a lot of the carnage had happened. And once again, you were making an audio recording. I'm not sure if you heard it or if you just heard it on the recording, again, as an EVP, but something said, a male voice said the words, either get away from there or get out of here. Is that accurate?
It is, and nobody was saying those words at the time. Clearly, it's not my voice. I have an accent. And most interesting of all to me was I didn't pick that spot randomly. This had been a spot I'd been guided to by none other than Mr. Mark Goodyear.
Mark Goodyear told you to go to the spot where we're looking at you now, where this very bizarre voice was picked up on audio recording. I'm going to play that. I want to play it on a loop because when I listened to it, I had to listen to it like 8 times just to sort of, I'm not sure what I'm hearing, but I want our audience to listen for, and it's either get away from there or get out of here. You're not sure which one it is, right?
That's correct. And, you'll hear a female researcher at the end say that was weird immediately afterwards. No matter what it says, it's the voice of a male that was not physically present with us at the time.
Okay, let's play that tape a few times and then I'll come back and ask you about it.
That is weird. That is weird. body's weird.
So I'm having trouble making it out. It just sounds like, boop, boop, that was weird.
Okay. A lot of people here, you know, get away from there. But we also have to be a little bit skeptical, Ashley. The human brain also likes to hear patterns in seemingly randomless background noise. So what we can say for sure, though, is that this was one of the spots where Mark Goodyear had said that Herb Baumeister had disposed of the remains of some of his victims. And it is a voice which, whether you can make out any of the words or not, should not have been on that recording. Not mine, not one of my fellow investigators.
I could talk to you for months about this. Like, the hair is standing up on my arm just as we go over these few details. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate this tonight.
My pleasure, Ashley. Thanks for shining a light on this very important case.
And again, want to let you know that Richard Estep's book is called The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm, Unraveling the History and Hauntings of a Serial Killer's Home. And coming up after the break, the one thing that you can do to help solve the Fox Hollow murders. And I'm not kidding. You can do something. I'm going to tell you exactly what it is and get you the phone number after this.
Thanks for listening to News Nation on the go. I'm Elizabeth Vargas. We're here for you 24/7 on the News Nation app or on your Alexa. Just say, play News Nation.
But there is a way that you, the viewer, can help solve the Fox Hollow murders. Since the release of the Hulu docuseries, the coroner's office has received hundreds of new tips on potential victim identities, and they are not done yet. They say anyone out there with a missing relative or someone who knows of a missing person from the 1980s, the 1990s in central Indiana, even somebody who could have been visiting the area at the time, police want them to submit a DNA swab for testing because genealogy might be able to trace back the identities of the victims buried at Fox Hollow and solve the mystery. Call the Hamilton County Coroner's Office at 317-770-4415.